Darling, it's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what is going on?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. I'm so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
This is episode 380.
380? Wow, that's impressive, Lynn. And I can hardly believe it.
I know. And we will hit 400 by the end of this year.
Wow, 400. That's quite impressive.
Crazy. It is. So if you're wondering, who are these jokers talking? I'm about to turn this thing off. Don't. Because we.
But wait, there's more.
That's right. We are two former custodial cast members, Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host the number one podcast hosted by two former Disneyland Custodial cast members.
Number one.
And we also are the authors of Cleaning the Kingdom. We have two books out in our series, and you can get both books on Amazon. They're in paperback. You can get them on Kindle, like electronic versions, wherever those are found, and audio versions of the books. And you can, for a short time, you can get, and while supplies last, you can get the second book on our website, signed by both of us, at thesweepspot.com. Also, you can help support our show by joining our Patreon and get some great perks. For $5 or more per month, you can get one bonus episode delivered to you that Ken and I record specifically for the Patreons. And you can also join in as we record the current events live once a month. And you get to kind of chime in on comments and be in the chat room. And we have a fun little discussion before we even start recording sometimes. So it's a lot of fun. And if you'd like to do that, you can sign up for $5 or more per month. And it really does help us out a lot. Helps pay the bills. So we are listener supported, and so you can do that and become a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com, search the Sweep Spot, or you can go to thesweepspot.com and look for the Patreon link there. Ken, who's our guest tonight?
Well, Lynn, we have a really great guy. His name is Ken Pellman. He's a voiceover guy. No, and a public information officer, and a gentleman. We don't always have a guest on the Sweep Spot because it's very hard to find people who want to do this program. No, that's not true. Sometimes we just like to record just the two of us. Mm-hmm. So this time we will have a public information officer and voice Ken Pellman. Mm-hmm. And we will have author, podcaster extraordinaire, and sanitation engineer Lynn Barron.
Travel planner.
How could I forget that? Stay tuned for info about that. But as always, folks, do stay tuned till the very end because we like to give some important information at the end. But yeah, sometimes we just like to record just the two of us so that we can chit-chat and go in-depth on the subject. When we have a guest on, we like to give the guest the floor as much as possible. But we're going to
give you
plenty of information and opinions. And yeah, so.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. But I did want to mention one thing that I forgot about as I was talking about the Patreons. We actually have a new Patreon.
Ooh.
And I wanted to celebrate and mention his name. His name is Les Scott.
Thank you very much for your support.
Yes, thank you. You have
chosen wisely. This path leads to timeless youth and beauty.
And much listening. So
no, thank you.
Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. So I think we need to just get right into this main topic. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
Welcome to the Golden Jubilee celebration of Tomorrowland Rapid Transit. For 50 years, we've imagined how transportation of the future might change your lives. Here now is one of our early visions of the world of tomorrow.
Gentlemen, I officially rededicate Tomorrowland.
So, for our main topic this week, I thought we'd discuss something that came from a listener who suggested that we talk about Disneyland Tomorrowland 1998, and also kind of give our view on what Tomorrowland can be and what it probably will be. So this is always a fun topic because Ken and I both worked there during this time period, so we have lots of memories and things to discuss about it. It was Tomorrowland. So, you know, just to go back way back, you know, Tomorrowland, When it first opened in 1955, it was one of the last lands that they kind of threw stuff together. They had a lot of sponsors. They had, you know, the aluminum? What was that, Ken?
Kaiser Aluminum?
Kaiser Aluminum. They had, you know, a lot of displays and things there.
Monsanto?
Monsanto, yeah, was a big sponsor. And, you know, they had the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you know, not going to name all, but just a lot of things they kind of threw together. And Walton realized that and knew that. And they had plans pretty quickly to do something that ended up being Tomorrowland 1967, which was an amazing Tomorrowland that I think a lot of people have good memories about. I was there in 67, obviously, but soon after, and then Tomorrowland started to change a little bit. You had you had Space Mountain, you had America Sings come in,
Well, yeah, America's. You had the Carousel of Progress, which
Carousel, yeah,
people had known from the New York World's Fair. And then, you know, they shipped that off to Walt Disney World, which, you know, Walt Disney World opened in 1971.
Right.
So they ended up shipping off the Carousel of Progress, at least the sets and the characters and everything. The building, of course, they didn't ship off, but they opened up America Sings in 1974, kind of looking forward to the bicentennial of the United States of America in 1976. Right. And then, of course, Space Mountain, the whole complex was 1977. That didn't, you know, what did that all include there, Lynn?
For which part?
Well, for Disneyland, you had the Space Mountain attraction.
Right.
Right. And then you had the Space Place restaurant, you had the stage right there, and you had the Starcade.
Open air stage that was there before the Magic Eye Theater was right there. Yeah, you had the Starcade and you had Mission to Mars.
It was a big addition.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot going on, and there was changes over the years through the 70s and into the 80s, obviously, with Star Tours coming in.
Right. They closed what? They closed the Adventure to Inner Space in 1985 to turn that into Star Tours. Magic Eye Theater was built where the open air stage had been, and that that was built for Captain EO. I mean, they did brand Magic Journeys in there at first, and then they did Captain EO. They officially opened that in September of 86 because they wanted to kind of space out that with Star Tours, which officially opened in January of 1987. So Tomorrowland, you know,
from that point, though, from the time Star Tours opened, there wasn't really too much going on, right?
Right, there wasn't. I mean, nothing real, nothing significant, really, right? I mean, from
86 to 98, yeah, that I can think of.
Correct. And, you know, it became... It's interesting. There had been plans, you know, there were various plans for Tomorrowland. Like they were going to put the Star Wars. They knew they wanted to do a Star Wars attraction. And they thought that was going to be where, at least where the America Sings Carousel Theater building was, which is now, you know, which has most recently been Star Wars Launch Bay. They thought it was going to go there, which meant, well, they're going to have to close down America Sings, and that generated Splash Mountain. You know, that's a whole nother story. But then, of course, they put Star Tours where Adventure Center Space had been instead. And so, but you know, in 1988, they closed down America Sings. So that sat there. So that's sitting there empty. I mean, they used, you know, they didn't tear anything down. It was still there.
Right.
They used the theater seats for these. They did classes in there, like, you know, fire extinguisher classes and things like that. Their performance excellence, you know, employee empowerment evolution, you know, this whole corporate thing that was sweeping the nation that Disney bought into as well. Those kinds of trainings and classes would take place in there. So for the guests, though, it was just like, there's nothing going on. And the Skyway closed in 1994.
November.
So you have things going away. And then there were plans to renovate Tomorrowland, like a complete overhaul.
Wasn't there a thing called Tomorrowland 2055?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've got this Splash Mountain edition of Disney News Magazine that I got sent by like Tony Baxter and Bruce Gordon and John Stone, and they had all autographed it. And Tony had wrote, see you in Tomorrowland 92.
Right.
Because that had been the plan, was after Splash Mountain, they were going to do Tomorrowland and have it ready in 1992. And it was going to be, you know, Tomorrowland 2055, which is harkens to the 100th anniversary of Disneyland. And it was going to be this unified thing where, you know, this is kind of a community in 2055 where, you know, aliens have landed, and, you know, there's this whole, you can find write-ups out there on 2055 and what, you know, what it was going to be.
Disneyland's 100th birthday was in, you know, it's 2055, and they mentioned that in the plans I noticed here. But mostly concept art. They didn't really have anything as far as attractions yet, I don't think.
Well, there was...
Not publicly.
There were, you know, because you had... Okay, because Disneyland Paris was being developed, and that opened up in 92. And they were going to have... They were going to adapt the attraction, the Timekeeper attraction, the Visionarium from Disneyland Paris... was going to replace Circle Vision. They were going to have the Carousel Theater was going to be transformed into something called Plectu's Fantastic Galactic Review. It's going to, with the premise of it being like this traveling musical act, or a series of traveling musical acts that were, you know, it was a spaceship that landed that brings these musical acts to the different places in the galaxy. And the star, the Mission to Mars attraction, which, you know, I think it eventually did stop opening in 1992, but that was going to be Alien Encounter, which did end up at Walt Disney World in 94. And I forget if they were going to replay, if they had anything planned for where Captain EO was, or if Captain EO was going to stay, but you know, so that was the idea. And of course, a whole, you know, redressing of the area. There was going to be signs that were going to include English and an alien language, an idea that was later adapted to Indiana Jones,
right?
You know, the little spaceships here and there, as if, you know, they're smaller creatures that had flown in and stuff like that, you know, just lots of that around the area.
Well, what happened? Why didn't this?
Well, they prioritized Indiana Jones. I think the powers that be wanted to get Indiana Jones in there first.
Do you think that because Paris opened, like you had said,
1992,
it didn't open with the greatest. The expectations were a lot bigger, right? When it first opened. It now is great, and it's, you know, but, and the park was great when it opened. I'm just saying it wasn't taken as it wasn't as popular as they thought.
They had like five hotels for a one-day park.
And yeah.
People could take the train in from Paris. You know, you could stay in Paris, you know, and then take the train in. So it's like, they kind of overbuilt on the hotels, you know, and then.
But financially, do you think that?
Yeah, financially, there were a lot of issues.
Could have affected Disneyland's Tomorrowland too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So they prioritized Indiana Jones because they had the technology for Indiana Jones the way they wanted it. So they're like, let's go ahead and do that. And so there were different concepts bandied about. You know, Montana, the quote unquote Montana Tomorrowland, that was kind of like an appeal to Michael Eisner's desire, where it'd be kind of greenery, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of almost like, let's hide the buildings underneath green hills and things like that, you know? Make it look like it's, you know, more of a prairie instead of a highly urban. Just various things kicked around, you know? And then, you know, in the meantime, Mission to Mars closes down.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you had mentioned things that had closed down. I mean, the Carousel Theater stayed empty, and from 88 all the way till 98, right?
Yeah, all the way till the new Tomorrowland.
So for 10 years, there was that sign out front that
close to Imagineer, a brand new attraction. Now, there were some people at Imagineering who wanted that sign taken down because it's come on, if you're not going to let us do something right now, let's just take that sign down.
Right.
You know,
but you said Mission to Mars, that closed in November 92. So pretty, I mean, that building set empty for a while, if you're talking 92, for 6 years. Captain EO saw its last showing in April of 97. CircleVision, September 97. I remember I went on the last day of that.
Well, they brought back, because CircleVision had been showing Wonders of China, which was a film from Epcot Center. And they're showing that during the day, or, you know, morning. And then later in the afternoon, they would switch over to American Journeys.
Right.
But what they did before closing it, they switched it over to a classic, America the Beautiful, which was an older film.
Better. I enjoyed that much better, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had that. I don't remember how long it ran for, maybe 6 months or something like that, a year. It ran for a while. And the People Mover closed in August of 95. Yes. And then we had the Rocket Jets that stayed open until January 97. Star Tours remained. Space Mountain remained. Utopia remained. Monorail and Submarine Voyage for the time. And then Skyway, like we had said, November 94. So, you know, a lot of the new land and the ideas, because we mentioned Paris, came from that futuristic look, but focused heavily on like the European inventors, explorers, and scientists. You know,
right?
Jules Verne, and
it was just in Paris. It was Discovery Land. It wasn't Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So that's kind of where the bronze kind of came from. Everywhere, because the Discovery Land there has that look to it.
Yeah, and a lot of people didn't like it.
I remember Space Mountain.
Well, Space Mountain got that look too. Well, there's a lot of people who can. I don't know if I'm getting ahead of but
maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I can reserve that. But they these things are closing down, right? They're getting ready for an overhaul, because it's finally. I mean, you think about it. They had originally intended the overhaul to be 1992, and now it's getting to be 6 years later. You know.
Right, but they didn't want to close the whole land off because of very popular attractions that take a lot of people away from other areas of the park, like Space Mountain, Star Tours, Utopia's back there. So that back area didn't really get touched too much, Utopia, Subs, and Monorail. So they were able to kind of do it in areas. Of course, the entrance was closed for a while, but then the area in the middle between like Space Mountain, People Mover, and the Carousel Theater, that area was moved. And then it opened with pavers, right?
Well, yeah, they had.
So they had to redo the whole. Stone.
They had. Yeah. They were redoing the ground. I was trying to think of floor, but floor implies inside. But the there were a lot of walls up. I can remember working over there, like in later 97 or early 98, and there was a lot closed and a lot walled up, and there were things closed in other parts of the park too. I had a guest come up to me, and they're like, well, you know, what can we do over here? And I'm like explaining what's open, and then they're asking about attractions in other parts of the park. Well, that's being refurbished right now, and
right, especially and really, in January, February, when
and I ended up writing a column, using the conversation I had with the guest, saying, "This is why you need the A through E coupon system back." You know, because these people have paid the same price someone else pays to get in. You know, when everything's open, and there's a lot that's closed, and they feel kind of cheated.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had, you know, the option to pay a lower price to come in, but then pay per attraction, they wouldn't have felt cheated, because, you know, you're not going to pay for attractions that aren't open. But anyway, so that was, you know, construction's always inconvenient, and
they should have had the tiered ticket prices like we have now, right? If they had had
they could have done that, yeah. But
right.
But you know, they're working on the facades, changing the ground, putting in cosmic waves.
yeah. We'll talk about all the stuff that was added. But
they gutted out the Carousel Theater building was gutted,
mm-hmm.
completely gutted. Because up until that point, it had been the same basic. From the time it was built in 1967, you know, even though they changed it to America Sings, it had been the same basic contents in terms of you had theater seating and the stage and, you know. So they completely gutted that. And I can remember being in the Utilidor that runs under Tomorrowland and going up a few steps and peeking out. And I was underneath the empty shell.
Wow.
Of the building, and it was just this massive empty building. But they had to gut it to prepare for what they were doing to it, you know.
I remember when I worked there the first time, we had had some safety training meetings in there, and that would have been 91, 92. Yeah.
Yeah. The how to use the fire extinguisher and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after 3 years of construction and anticipation, the new Tomorrowland opened in May 22nd, 1998.
It was a long time coming. It's not the entirety of Tomorrowland. They waited a couple years to do the Utopia.
Right.
And all that.
But for the opening, We'll talk about just the opening and what it opened with. And for the opening, we had former astronaut Buzz Aldrin there, joined several other space explorers on the stage for a dedication ceremony that day. And the idea behind a lot of this, before we get into some of the attractions, was that all the plants were edible, right? Remember that?
Right. For ecological purposes, you don't just have landscaping for the sake of landscaping. It's all edible stuff, supposedly.
Remember the little signs they had in the flower beds that slowly disappeared?
I'm sure they'll show up at the Von Eaton Gallery someday.
So here are some of the new additions that it opened with, and we can kind of talk as long as we want about each of these if we want. The Astro Orbiter, so that was the rocket, the AstroJet, or
it's replacing the rocket jets.
They had different names, but those are up on top of the old People Mover load unload area.
So this got moved down off of that perch from up there,
right
down to ground level and out in front of the land.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the reason for that. I know that the capacity, but the load was probably slower. I mean, they did have the two elevators to get you up there.
Yeah.
But I imagine that it was still a very slow moving attraction, and maybe they were thinking by putting it on the ground they can extend the queue and it would be a little quicker. I don't know.
I think it was a cost issue. it's a heavier thing overall because of all of the I don't know you'd call the planetarium, you know, look to it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a clone of what they had in Disneyland Paris. And by moving it off the top perch down the ground level, you essentially turned it into, you know, an alternate version of Dumbo. But if they were going to keep it, if they were going to keep it up where they had it, they would have had to do some expensive structural changes.
That's
and that money sense. Was tight, and that's going to be a recurring theme for her
as we talk
about this.
Yeah. And to go along with that, in the entrance, they added those, you know, people started to rename these the French fry rocks, but they the ones they've removed, what, 5 years ago or something, just before the shutdowns, that were there around, sort of around that. Remember in one of them, there was like a little door and they had like, I don't know, for like electronics or whatever for the, but I remember there was a phone in there I would use sometimes.
It behooved us to know where park phones were so that we could call security or the or custodial central.
Our pagers or whatever we had.
Yeah.
So that was an addition to the new land. And then Star Tours remained, but everything got a new facade and everything. And
paint. Star Tours was still the same. Classic Star Tours,
right?
There's no Rebel Spy. There's, you know, it's, you're heading towards Endor. That's the one trip,
right? The same thing that had been going at that time for 12 years. And then Circle Vision, you know, we had mentioned that it closed down. That became a pre-show queue for the new attraction Rocket Rods. Remember when you first went in those doors, they had those, the older, ride vehicles for different attractions. They had the people mover.
Yes.
But they were in that fluorescent, they had like stripes of like that fluorescent orange and they had the black light in there.
Right.
Had that, they had a rocket, they had, they didn't have Space Mountain. Vehicle. What was the other? There's a
I think they took the Mouser Rail. I think that's what it was.
An
old repurposed monorail.
So it's kind of dim and dark, kind of darker in there, everything black, you know, the walls and everything. And
yeah,
and that was kind of the beginning when you first walked in, and I think it kind of zigzagged in there, around that small room, which used to be the pre-show to Circle Vision, where you would sit on those little padded benches before you go into the theater. And then when you would enter the theater, which they remained the same round, they just took out the leaning rails.
Yeah.
Right? Still had the curtains around the... Probably new, but still had the curtains around the outside, the outer rim of it. And it did have carpet, but I think they took the carpet out of the walkways. But I remember that I thought there was carpet on the outside of it. But anyways, that kind of went around in a circle and zigzagged around.
This is where Buzz Lightyear is now, in case you're wondering, people.
Yeah, because you wouldn't even recognize it now, because they totally gutted that building for that attraction. But they had a pre-show in there that showed like concept vehicles, like funny concept of different cars they had and testing they would do. And I think Walt had a thing where he was talking about... like the vehicles of tomorrow or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. Do you remember that?
I just remember it had like parts of old Circle Vision films sped up. Mm-hmm. And
that too. Yeah. You know. Yeah. It was probably on a loop of I don't know, 15 minutes or so. And as you exited that building for the, you're still in line for Rocket Rods. Mm-hmm. They created a new area that went down some steps
into a new tunnel. Basically.
Yeah, a brand new tunnel that was dug just for this attraction. So you could get up to the people mover, the old people mover, load unload, which is where you would be for the Rocket Rods. But as you're going through this tunnel on the left side, they had this like a map, and it was kind of like a, what would you call it? It was, I don't think it was actually like plans, but they were trying to make it look.
It was, it was like a concept. Future stops for this transport system.
Of what Rocket Rods could eventually be someday, you know? And they had like Anaheim Stadium on there, and I might have had John Wayne Airport, and the pond at the time. They had just various places all over the area where it could possibly take you. This was not real. They didn't have plans to do this, but it was like a fake concept. And I always thought it would have been a good idea, but I don't, maybe not the Rocket Rod vehicles, but so as you went through this tunnel, it was dark, and then you started to go up some more stairs where you can kind of see the light and everything, and eventually you would end up these stairs at the top where you used to board the people mover. And everyone's been to Disneyland for a while now has seen that building. It's still sitting there. And you would get up there, and that's where you would load onto the Rocket Rods. And the Rocket Rods, as far as the track, was pretty identical to the People Mover.
Yeah, it was repurposed People Mover track.
Right, just different track, different
track. Yeah, mechanisms on it, but hardware on it. But I think the only thing they altered was when it went through the Carousel Theater building. I think that was the only place they altered the track, you know, as far as the course of it. Because the People Mover used to go through that, you know.
Yeah, it kind of went around.
Like, and that's where they were, they had their maintenance bay on the back of that.
Oh, yeah. Where the old Skyway load was, right? Kind of up that way. Yeah. So describe... Because I know a lot of people have heard of the Rocket Rods, but maybe hadn't had a chance to go on it or seen video of it.
Well, very few people had a chance to go on it.
I did, and you did, and
There's video online. I mean, it was. I don't know how you describe it. You know, how many seats were there? There were like five or six or whatever, and there was
I think it was two in the back, and then one, two,
maybe two in the back, but everyone else was one seat.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're like strapped in there big time. And they would zoom off.
Doing a wheelie. Remember that?
Shaped almost kind of like almost conical, you know, but with a point forward. But they would zoom off. Well, I think at first they did wheelies, or they wanted them to do wheelies. But I think they stopped that. But, you know, it zooms off really fast because People Mover was slow moving attraction, slow and leisurely. But Rocket Rods, you're zooming off really fast, but then you have to slow down to turn. And it follows the course the People Mover did. It goes into Star Tours, goes by the Starcade, through Space Mountain, you know.
Yeah, remember the mirrors? There was like mirrors that made
They had tried to have show elements. So, like you're going to smash into yourself or whatever. But
Or another vehicle.
But then there's an outdoor portion once you get past the Carousel Theater, and then you're high above the Utopia, and you're zooming around back there, and you come on down by the monorail station, and, you know, you zoom through the building that's now the... You know, the Rock and Rods pre-show, and you turn
but
and
you
go
couldn't
back.
See. I don't. Could you see down into the pre-show?
Didn't they cover it up when it was Space Mountain? Didn't they cover up Space Mountain? I don't know if they covered it up in there.
I think they may have covered up most of it, except for that part where we described the vehicle, like the very first room.
You didn't really have a lot of time to look anyway, because you know, it was a fast moving thing, and then.
But the thing with that attraction, it was fast, but because the track, like you had mentioned, was designed for a slow moving ride, it couldn't take the turns fast. So it would get a lot of speed. And I know the plan was that they wanted it to have banked turns, but you know, things got budget and everything. But it had to make that turn, so they had to slow it way down to make that turn.
Yeah. I can go into, we should probably go over everything else before I go into the explanation of all of the budgeting stuff.
Yeah. So that was Rocket Rod. You come back to the station and get off there, and, you'd go back downstairs and exit into kind of almost the same exit as you do for, Buzz Lightyear now. Kind of in that area. But I wanted to also mention that right next to the queue for that, they had something called the American Space Exploration, sponsored by NASA. It was like an exhibit, and it sat in the space kind of where the Fast Pass machines used to be for Buzz Lightyear and in that that area right in there. It wasn't huge, but they had like scales that you could stand on that would tell you how much you would weigh on certain planets, you know, because of, you know, gravity or no gravity and all that, or extra. And then they had a moon rock, an actual moon rock. I remember that on display. They had Apollo spacesuits and stuff. So they had that there. That was a little display. Next to it was the Premiere Shop, which I don't know if they ever changed the name of that. I couldn't find anything on that. I think it did just stay the Premiere Shop. But I remember going in there, and that's where they had those kiosks where you could make your own CDs. What were those called? The
Disneyland Forever.
Forever, yeah. Those were really neat. I think I made only one or two. I think I definitely made one. But you could pick attraction soundtracks and things, which back then, you know, you didn't have the internet as widely used where you could find some of this stuff.
What you had were people exchanging these, like, on analog techno, like, you know, cassette tapes, bootleg copies of these soundtracks. So Disney's like, well, why don't we make money off of this? You know?
Right. And so it was a great idea, because I thought it was great. I thought, oh, I could take this home and listen to it, you know. So
yeah.
So they had that in that shop. And then up on top of where the Rocket Rods was the Observatron. What was that, Ken?
Well, since they needed a whole new mechanism and structure for the Astro Orbiter, they took the remnants of the rocket jets. You know, the rocket jets themselves were repurposed. But they took the remnants of the mechanism, and they made it look like it was a communication device of some sort, you know, satellite dishes and things like that.
Right.
And then every 15 minutes, it would rotate, and the arms would lift up and down, and there would be music playing.
Wasn't it the Rocketeer soundtrack, or part of it was?
That's one of them. It was just, but it was, the storyline was that it was sending off signals into space, you know.
Right.
But, it was funny. Certain ex-coworker of ours who's been on this podcast had told me his dislike for James Horner.
Oh.
This guy's a big fan of Danny Elfman.
Mm-hmm.
in Kano and all those, you know, all those. But he did not like James Horner and said, everything James Horner does sounds the same. So we're sitting there. The Observatron goes off, right? And he goes, why is there Titanic music in Tomorrowland? And I said, it's not Titanic music. It's James Horner from Rocketeer. He goes, see, I told you, James Horner sucks. That's, you know, funny. Everything he does sounds the same, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's not my opinion of James Horner, but, you know, I just thought that was hilarious because, yeah, it was repurposed music. Yeah, so that's what that was.
That's funny.
So I think it's still up there. They don't use it.
It's just frozen right now.
Frozen. And we decided to heed Stephen Hawking, mm-hmm. who's like, why the heck are you trying to get in touch with alien civilizations? You know, what always happened on Earth when civilizations discovered each other? You know, maybe we shouldn't be trying to call attention to, you know. But anyway,
The music's gone and the movement is gone.
The day the music died.
So of course, you know, the Star Trader remained, the Starcade. Then in the Magic Eye Theater,
they changed it,
and they changed the show. And there was, now, did the show that we're going to talk about, did that open first at Epcot?
Right. It opened first at Epcot in 1994, I believe. Mm-hmm. So they changed the Magic Eye Theater into the Imagination Institute. And it had been a hit out at Walt Disney World at Epcot. So now it's a few years later. It's 1998, you know. They had to install a moving floor in the theater. You know, that had to be retrofitted with a moving floor, because before it had just been, you know, a stationary, probably concrete floor.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other show elements that are in the theater. You know, this is back. I actually wrote about this as part of one of my college things. You know, back then you had this kind of battle going on in the theme park world for upping the ante in what we call 4D shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you're using 3D technology and you're also using in-theater effects. You know, that Campanillo had been, you know, ooh, there were lasers and fog in the theater. You know, that was a big deal. And then along comes this, which, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, which the premise is you're not looking at a movie. The premise is you're looking at a demonstration. The audience is from the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids series. You know, the audience ends up getting shrunk down. And, you know, of course, you've got to be put back to your right size. This time it's not Monsanto doing the shrinking. But, you know, that was, they kind of had to have ways of, you know, how do you tell the story without breaking the premise? So they had a, you know, the little screen off to the side that was helping to tell the story. And then, you know, it's like, what did Universal responded with Terminator 2 3D?
Mm-hmm. That was a great show.
Muppet Vision had been huge. Muppet Vision came out before, and that had, like, you know, all those animatronics in the theater and stuff like that. And that had been at the Disney MGM Studios. And so you just have this upping of the ante with, you know, trying to do all this stuff in the theater and stuff like that. But Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, which had been a big hit out at Epcot, but it's a few years later and it's not as big of a deal by the time it opens at Disneyland.
I thought it was a great show. I really enjoyed it. Because I had nice never show, been to Epcot at that point.
Well, that helps, you know.
but I thought it was really good. It stayed popular for a while, and you know, it's better than what they have there now, but
yeah,
just nothing. But we'll talk about that later. So yeah, so Honey, I Shrunk the Audience took over the space and was a popular show. And then we talked about Space Mountain. So the whole area had this bronze kind of look to it. This, what would you call that? That look, something.
Well,
steampunk kind of ish, a little bit.
Yeah, they tried to go for that. I don't know what term you'd use for it,
but yeah,
you know, it's one of people's biggest complaints about that whole thing. But you know, they're trying to I think they were trying to get away, like with Discovery Land, you know, and they were trying to get away from, let's try to make things look ultra futuristic, because that just becomes dated so fast. So let's do mm-hmm. something that's not going to become dated that quickly.
Right.
But you know, they didn't change anything. They might have added some monitors in the queue of space, mm-hmm. but they weren't changing Space Mountain, you know, except they were changing how you get in there, because they took away, right. there used to be those, here we go again, speed ramps. Used to be those out in front of what had been the Magic Eye Theater. But when they changed that into the Imagination Institute, they got rid of the speed ramp going up to Space Mountain, and now you're going to go up where the Space Place restaurant used to be, because there's a walk, a stationary walkway ramp that goes up to the upper level,
right?
And what else, Lynn?
Well, we have Cosmic Waves, and that didn't open until June 22nd, so ooh. a month later.
I don't know how they could open Tomorrowland without that.
I know. It was a 60-foot wide circle with fountains popping out, kind of like a, what do they call it now? You can call it like a splash pad or something like that, they call it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an interactive fountain.
Right, and they had a big granite ball in the middle that was floating on this high-pressure water.
And they still have that ball there, right?
Yeah, I don't think it moves, though.
Or they have the one over on the DCA side that's the Pixar ball, right?
That one moves, but this one does not move. But the whole idea was that, at least I think they thought, that the kids would try to not get wet.
Right.
And try to run.
Because the fountains would go
up and down. Yeah.
It's almost like a maze.
Mm-hmm,
you know, and you kind of observe the timing of the fountains and go, oh, well, I can get to the ball without getting soaked.
But as we know, what happened with that?
Well, and also, you know, these things play differently in Central Florida,
mm-hmm.
where the weather's different, the humidity is different. It's a different dynamic in Anaheim, California. So, yeah, it became kind of problematic.
Yeah, people are running and getting hurt and taking their shoes off. And I mean, where the water would come out were these metal grates, I guess, or like, what would you call that? Like little
circular. Oh, they're jets that are in the right. in the ground.
Right. But people were getting their feet cut and hurt, and
people getting soaked, people basically taking baths, you know.
Yeah, just completely drenched in there, which probably was great in the summertime. But yeah, so that was in the very middle. It's still kind of there. I mean, the water element is not, but you can still kind of see where that area is. I think there's like benches there and like planters, but and the old Mission to Mars building was turned into a restaurant. And that was Red Rocket's Pizza Port opened. And that actually opened before the opening of Tomorrowland. That opened in March, believe it or not.
The original plan, I think, had been to have some of the old ride vehicles of Tomorrowland in there as seating. But they abandoned that idea. They did use some of the old Space Place seating.
Right, the outdoor
seating.
Yeah. On the bottom level. And
right.
And it was, I don't know, I thought it was a great idea. They didn't really have a place that was like that, you know? I mean, they had pizza there and pasta in different places, but I thought it was good at first. It was good. And so that was there. Still is. I think it's the Alien Pizza Planet now. Same food. And then remember next to that, they had the Spirit of Refreshment, and they had that, the rocket that they brought back. It wasn't the same rocket.
No, it was a tribute to the, to the old rocket, to the moon rocket.
Remember the ODV people with outdoor vending would, you would order a Coke and they came in those bottles and it would pop up. Remember? It would pop up and they'd grab it and it was,
it would shoot up from below.
Yeah.
Yeah. And land in somebody's eye and there's a lawsuit and
Yeah. So that was just like a little outdoor stand that was kind of right there next to it. Might still be there, but and then let's talk about what went in this place of the Old America Sings building.
Okay.
That was Innoventions, which didn't open until July 3rd. So that summer, 98.
Well, they had opened at Epcot. They had, what they had done is they had these east and west shopping and dining areas in the middle of Future World. Mm-hmm. And they had turned that, it was called Communicore at first, and then they had turned that into Innoventions. And Innoventions was kind of playing off the popularity of the Consumer Electronics Show. And you have that every, like, January in Las Vegas.
Right.
And, you know, people getting to check out the latest in electronics and things like that. And that had turned out to be really popular at Future World. So they said, well, let's replicate that at Disneyland. In fact, we'll organize it even better. We're going to put it all in this one building. You know, the building's going to rotate on the outside. See, when it was America Sings in the Carousel Progress, it would move during the breaks in the show acts. So it would move a little bit and then stop. And move a little bit and stop. Well, they decided, hey, how about we constantly have the lower level moving more slowly? We can group people to have an introductory little show when they first enter, and then they can disperse and enjoy, you know, the rest of Innoventions.
Right.
And the part of, you know, this ties into the budget. Part of the reason they did this was because the companies that have the displays there are paying for all of these exhibits. And Disney doesn't have to spend a lot of money to create this. You know?
Yeah. And we had Tom Morrow in there.
Tom Morrow, which was very similar to Timekeeper, which they had at Walt Disney World. I mean, they had it at Disneyland Paris and they had it at Walt Disney World. Timekeeper was voiced by Robin Williams at Disney World, and then they Nathan Lane, I believe, voiced Tom Morrow, you know, a robot, you know, a humanoid type robot.
Nathan Lane.
You know, it's a great big world of Innoventions, you know. So they kind of repurposed the song "Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow" from the Carousel Progress that had been there.
Played for a while.
Yeah, and you were, it was designed so that you would exit up the second level and down the, there's a ramp, stationary ramp that you would take as at the exit. But yeah, the whole thing was, you know, hey, we're going to have like a permanent Consumer Electronics Show in here. You know, see what's coming to your home soon, you know, and you know, the companies that have the exhibits are going to pay for them all. And That way we don't have to spend the money to put a new attraction here. Because they had, you know, they had kicked around a bunch of ideas for that space, but just nothing got to the final planning stages to actually get built. So it's like, okay, well, let's give up on it being a carousel theater and they turned it into Interventions.
Yeah.
There's one other thing that was part of the new Tomorrowland that I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
They put in, you know, Disney was started to do this radio programming called Radio Disney because Disney bought ABC's Cap Cities, what, in 1995 or something like that. And part of the deal back then were radio stations and a radio network. And so, I mean, that's how ABC started out. But it's they had a radio studio right there. What is it now? Tomorrow Landing or something? But it was underneath the Rock and Rod loading area.
Yeah.
And it was facing the Interventions building, which is now Launch Bay. And so you had this radio studio, and the radio hosts could sit in there and look out, you know, look out into Tomorrowland. And you had just plain Mark and Zippy working in there, and we'd occasionally see them backstage or whatnot. But they would host a show from there, you know.
Yeah.
A radio show. So it that was a nice little interactive element, you know. They would call a busser in there from Tomorrowland Terrace, or it would be a segment called, you know, "What Did I Find in the Trash?" or something like that, you know. So the busser would say, "Oh, I found this in the trash," you know.
That's funny. Yeah, I think I remember that. I remember who it was. That was a really kind of a neat thing to see there. The Hatmosphere was still over there by the restrooms, kind of in the corner there.
Yeah.
But I had mentioned that nothing really changed on that side. Nothing more than a paint job. You had the Tomorrowland train station.
Yeah.
And then Utopia still had the switchbacks. That was just a covered area with switchbacks. And that stayed that way at least another year until they started renovation on
They renovated that for a 2000 opening. But,
yeah. But I remember I was there the last night that they ran the Utopia for the way it is until they extended the track and combined the Fantasyland and Tomorrowland. But yeah, at this time when it opened, it was just that. And for
Submarine Voyage was not long for being open either. Didn't it close down in 98?
So, yeah, it's September.
So there was a few months where that was open with the new Tomorrowland, but it ended up closing down. And yeah. We thought we were going to lose the, you know, there was a possibility of losing the submarines entirely. Well, the Rock and Rods had a lot of trouble. Ended up, you know, closing. They would be up and down, and they would, you know, they just had a lot of trouble. And then they eventually closed it and said, "Oh, we're going to retool it and we're going to reopen it," but they never did. It was on. It's still on hiatus.
Yeah, this is where we begin the
rise and fall of Tomorrowland 98.
Yeah, so we talked about things that closed from the old Tomorrowland to the 98 Tomorrowland, and now we're going back down the other direction. And Rocket Rods had a lot of problems. Didn't you say there was, you know, tires bursting, and
they were running through tires like crazy.
Yeah.
They had parts that were being,
the buildings were,
parts were falling off. Parts were being shot off of the vehicles. You know.
Yeah.
And supposedly it was doing damage to, you know, the Submarine Voyage.
I remember walking in that hallway where the Panabroom lockers were, you know that little hallway there to get into the Space Mountain restrooms from the backstage.
And the
rocket rods would go right over that. And I remember seeing like plaster on the floor and stuff, and the building just rattling as it would go over. So
all part of the show.
Yeah, it was definitely not designed for that. Probably the weight and the high speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to put it in, this into context. It's 97, 98. Frank Wells is gone. You know, he died in 94, I believe. He had been the president and chief operating officer of the Walt Disney Company and really was part of the team with Michael Eisner who helped the company be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very good at finding the gems in everything that Michael Eisner would come up with. You know, he could filter Michael Eisner and say, okay, you know, that's not going to work. That's, oh, but that'll work. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, later on, Steve Jobs, when Disney bought Pixar and Steve Jobs became a major player for Disney, he was able to do things like, you know, he helped bring about DCA 2.0, but you have to put it in the context. I mean, go back and look at what originally opened. I mean, you go back and look at the plans for like Westcott.
Yeah.
And then look at what DCA 1.0 was when it opened as in 2001, or with the Disney Studios Paris, you know, in what, 2002. So you have to look at the context of what was happening. The management of the company was, you know, the parks, especially mm-hmm. Disneyland, you know, it wasn't the best time. And corporate sponsorships weren't what they used to be, because now the internet's starting to take off, right?
Right. Yeah.
And these companies realize that they can reach people directly. They don't have to go through buying ads on TV. They don't have to sponsor pavilions and different, you know, world's fairs. They can have a website that people can visit directly. So it's becoming harder to get companies to sponsor major attractions. You had this problem at Epcot in Future World, where they had turned World of Motion. They decided we're going to open Test Track, and that was, I believe that was General Motors sponsored the original attraction. I believe they also mm-hmm. sponsored Test Track at first, and there have been a lot of problems and delays. And I, you know, and the car company's fortunes have gone up and down over the years. So I think Imagineering was kind of counting on GM sponsoring what became Rocket Rods, so they would have more money to put into it and just kind of showcase actual technology and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen, or that they pulled out or whatever. You know, I don't know if they were ever committed to it originally. You know, it's if you go down the canon of stuff that Tony Baxter led, and he led this project, this would probably, Tomorrowland 1998 would probably be the one thing that most people would say was, you know, the bottom of the list. you know, Big Thunder Mountain, great. Splash Mountain, great. You know, Big Fun, you know, Indiana Jones, great. New Fantasyland, all right. You know, Disneyland Paris, hooray.
Yeah.
The original Journey into Imagination, that's great, you know. But there's a whole context to what's going on and the budget constraints. And I think, I forget where he said it. He might have said it in multiple places. If he could go back and do it all over again, he would tell management, look, for the money that you're providing, you can have one new one great attraction. We're not gonna be able to overhaul the whole area. You know, we're not gonna be able to open up multiple things. We're gonna be able, with the money you're providing, we can open one great attraction and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they might have fired him, you know, we'll find somebody who will, you know, do it. But yeah, it wasn't the best time. So
right.
That's because you think of, go back to Tomorrowland 1967 and you know what Disney was, they're gearing up for Walt Disney World. Okay. They opened up New Orleans Square and Pirates of the Caribbean, and they're working on this 97 Tomorrowland. I mean, talk about a lot of investment.
Yeah, and this was right on the, you know, the end of, before Walt Disney had passed away. A lot of all this stuff had already been planned, probably budgeted under what he, you know, had planned out. So, but I wanted to go back to some of the stuff that closed, because in 2000, they went down, went on hiatus, as you say, and it officially closed in April of 2001. They had finally just said it's not reopening.
And yeah, by then you have California Adventure to distract people.
Right.
Yes.
And so then that empty Circle Vision old theater that was the queue for Rocket Rods became a great air-conditioned break room.
It was wonderful. Area.
Yeah. Dark and quiet and nice.
Yeah.
I had a cast member. I was the lead out there one day, and it was hot in the summer. I had a, looking for this cast member all day. Like, where the heck is he? And someone gave me a hint. Try in the Circle Vision Theater, and I go in there. I walk in, he goes, "Hey, Lynn, have a seat. Take off your shoes." yeah, you know who that is. So we, great guy, but it was funny. We had that was closed and nothing was going on there. And then the Observatron, like we had said, just kind of stopped running. The Radio Disney closed, and that became another place to kind of go to if you wanted to take an unofficial break. And then, so things started to empty out in Tomorrowland. We had a lot of vacant buildings. We had the, you know, the subs were closed, and they used the queue, part of the old queue for a store that was kind of an indoor-outdoor store that they had there.
Yeah.
That was under, you know, like you had mentioned, the old management that was big into adding as many stores and things as possible to sell. But so we had all that happening. The new Utopia opening in 2000. So then it kind of just stayed that way for a while. Past the time about the time I left in 2007 is when the subs reopened, late spring. And then in 2010, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience closed. And that's when you had, you know, Michael Jackson had passed away in 2009, and they turned that into the tribute, Captain EO tribute show.
Right.
They brought that back, and that was like that for a while.
Of course, they redid Space Mountain, reopened Space that Mountain, 2005.
Right, and they repainted the building back to white.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even that way for 10 years. So that reopened in 2005, Space Mountain, and that was closed for, I want to say it was at least a year to 2 years.
Something like that,
It had to have been. I mean, it was gutted down.
Yeah, they completely gutted it.
There was dirt in there. I remember walking by, and it was dirt. So, and then Innoventions closed in 2015. And,
Since then, Innoventions has been what? It's been soup. They had Star Wars Launch Bay. Didn't they have superhero? Like, what do they call it up on the upper level?
Oh, it's like a Marvel thing.
And
greets. That was before Avengers Campus. And what did you just call it? Oh, Launch Bay was.
Yeah.
So that was before Galaxy's Edge had opened. So you can go and see, you know, Darth Vader and Chewie and stuff in there. I think Rey was in there for a little bit. And then, but then Galaxy's Edge closed and it kind of remained open a little bit. And then we had the closures of the parks in 2020. And it kind of never reopened, except it reopened about a year ago for DVC Lounge, and that's still there today.
Yeah.
So
as we said, they changed Cosmic Waves.
Waves closed in 2002,
and they made that just that ball, you know.
So that only stayed open for what, 4 years?
Now Star Tours got changed though, right?
And then Star Tours got a new change in, what was that, 2011, 12, somewhere.
So the Adventures, you know, the Adventures Continue or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was right after. Was that right after Force Awakens opened? Like in that time area, I'm thinking.
The Force Awakens didn't come out until. Was it 2015 or?
15, yeah, you're right. Okay. I don't know. So there were some changes there where they had the different sequences depending on, you know, four different scenes that would rotate, which I enjoy. That's neat because then you have something different. And they are adding some.
They're still adding, yeah.
Adding something soon here. But yeah, I mean, Tomorrowland. Now, as far as anything left over from the 98 is the Astro Orbiter. I mean, it's closed now currently, but
it's being rebuilt. Yeah.
But yeah, that's really the only major thing.
Buzz Lightyear's were, you know, Buzz Lightyear came in and.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, you know. Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so things, you know, the subs reopen, like I mentioned. So Tomorrowland is one of those areas that you hear a lot of fans mention that what they would like and what they think should happen. And Tomorrowland has always been problematic because by the time they make plans and build it, something futuristic, it's past already, or it's not futuristic, it's present. So
yeah,
I think... they just should go with something retro, you know, like a time period or something. Well, I don't know.
I've wondered if they should get like just change it away from Tomorrowland. But I mean, I've had people point out to me, no, not in a Walt's original park. There should be a Tomorrowland. I mean, when Disneyland was first being built, you know, it was like, okay, one of the four big movie genres of the time. You know, you have the adventure. Stuff, the frontier western stuff, Fantasyland,
right.
And sci-fi, you know, Tomorrowland. And yeah, so
Avatar Land's gonna go?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh boy.
Yeah, we don't know for sure where Avatar Land's gonna go, but there's multiple possibilities. But what do you do with Tomorrowland? I mean, to me, it depends on if you're going to do anything futuristic in another part of the resort, you know. Like, let's say, I don't hold out hope this is going to happen, but
yeah.
Let's say they decide, hey, let's go with basically what was the Westcott concept.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you're kind of doing some futurism in that. So that kind of frees up Tomorrowland to not actually be literal futurism. You know, like you said, you can go retro with it. But you know what? I kept thinking about this over the years, and I'm thinking there's no rule that says it has to have a unifying theme throughout the entire land. Some of it can be retro, some of it can be just, you know, I mean, is Buzz Lightyear really futuristic? No.
No, it's space themed.
It can, you know, be something like that. It can be something, you know, some of it can be fantasy or sci-fi, and some of it can be scientific.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could probably get away with shrinking Tomorrowland a little bit so you can expand Fantasyland.
Yeah, there's been talk of the subs and, you know, Utopia going away. And I don't know.
Go ahead.
I don't like that idea because I like the space of it, of Utopia. I feel like when you leave the station, you're kind of out. You feel like you're kind of away from everyone. I don't know. Yeah. It just has a feeling that we're losing in Disneyland right now. You know, spaces yeah. where there aren't a lot of people, and I don't know. You know,
there. That's a really good point. Also, I think you need to have some equivalent mm-hmm. where kid, if you're going to get rid of that, you got to do something that kids can kind of control and pilot somewhere on the resort, you know, whether it's DCA side or whatever, you know, kids really like that. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, you can do an elevated thing, something that, you know, it's above and around the upper level of Tomorrowland, but, you know,
in Galaxy's Edge, they could do something.
You could do something there. Yeah, that's yeah. true. So, you know, what are they going to do with it? Well, who knows? I mean, are they going to announce something at D23? We don't know, but it's always been an issue, hasn't it? I mean, it's always been, you know, what do we do? I think aesthetically, you absolutely cannot, you know, styles are going to change, and you cannot predict what styles are going to be in 20 or 30 years.
Right.
I mean, the best you can do is make it so that you can change the facades more easily. If you feel like you need to change the facades to keep up with futurism, but you know,
yeah, I mean, they could do a lot if they tore down everything in the entrance, all the buildings, you know, space, Star Tours building, Buzz Lightyear building, and you could extend the land that goes beyond Pixie's Hollow, like back there by Matterhorn. Like you could extend things out farther back that direction. I mean, it's nice to have that walkway in between backside of Matterhorn, but I'm saying also you could utilize all that little grotto area there. So there's land that they don't have to stick to the two buildings on each side as you enter the Tomorrowland. Yeah. It could be something totally different. But
it could, yeah, you're right.
I don't, as far as attractions, where, you know, there's a lot of people have said put Tron in there, and I just because Tron is so big and everything, they would have to dig it down so it wouldn't what do they call that, the sight lines, like you would see it from Main Street definitely.
Yeah,
or Fantasy.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see something that kind of mashes up stuff that, you know, some of the elements they used to have or they still have in Future World at Epcot. There's things they could do. I mean, but the future ain't what it used to be. I mean, so much of literal futurism has to do with, you know, the microscopic world and the digital world,
the decline. No,
you know, it's not all space exploration now, you know, or so yeah.
What if they did like a spaceship Earth, like the big ball, like in the very middle of Tomorrowland, and had an attraction?
Well, they could do the show, but they don't need to have it be in a sphere,
right? That too,
they could take elements of the show, you know. I was a huge fan of Horizons. And I think, you know, if you take up some of the best elements from Future World,
tell the story of something that an invention that progressed, like they do in through communication in Spaceship Earth, you know, something like that.
Well, here's, you know, here are the visions of you know, past futurism visions, you know.
Mm.
Here are the building blocks of the future as we see them today, and here is the possible future now. You know, I mean, that's what Horizons did, but you could kind of, it doesn't have to be a clone of the old Horizons. It can just take that concept. But, you know, I really like the retro thing means it doesn't age as fast, you know.
Right. You could, that whole look of like the House of the Future and that, what do they call that? There's like a whole name, but I can't think of it at the moment.
Well, there's mid-century modern.
Mid-century modern. If you were to go that direction with Tomorrowland, I don't know.
Future from the 50s, they called it back then, you know, before, but.
Oh, there you go. Like you could do a 50s theme, but see, space.
The tie-in to that is Walt Disney's future, you know.
Right.
And that's appropriate for Disneyland.
The atomic age, like that whole kind of thing.
Yep.
All right. Well, we could probably go on this for a while. And
we have been talking about it for a while.
It's always fun to talk about that. But we'd love to hear your thoughts on that, too, because
we didn't even ask our guests for any thoughts on this one.
No.
Guests have been sitting there quietly, politely.
So quiet. And so, in fact, they left. No, just kidding. well, hope you enjoyed that look at Tomorrowland 1998, before and after. And I'm sure this will be a topic we revisit again in the future. Wow, Ken. I think we could talk about Tomorrowland for a long time. I have a lot of fond memories of Tomorrowland. The 1998 Tomorrowland is I'm fond of because that was the year I started in custodial that summer in 98. So, yeah.
Well, it's a great big beautiful tomorrow. And so I agree with you. We I've got my fond memories of it and we could talk more about it some other time, but we talked plenty about it this time.
We have. And I would love to hear your comments on what you think they should do with Tomorrowland. Maybe you think that it's perfect the way it is, you know. you never know. But I know a lot of people really like Buzz Lightyear. A lot of people really like Star Tours. Great attractions, but I could also see those being removed. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll see. A lot of people say, oh, we'll move Star Tours to Galaxy's Edge. I just don't see that happening.
It's a lot of work for Disney's going to look at it as that's a lot of work for how much payoff. The Galaxy's Edge is supposed to be this rogue outpost. It's not supposed to have an established airport, you know.
Right, and Millennium Falcon is a similar type of attraction.
Right, Smuggler's Run. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we'd love to hear your opinions, so you can always do that on any of our social medias, Facebook, Twitter, X, Instagram. You can email us at thesweetspot@gmail.com. And you can leave us a review wherever you listen, specifically Apple Podcast or iTunes is the ones we read. And speaking of that, I'm going to read a new one that we have. And this is, well, we may have read it last time, but we couldn't remember. So,
right. Yeah, but it's so good. But it's our latest review.
Yes.
So if you want us to read a new review, leave a new review.
Yeah. So we'll just keep reading this one until.
next time, if it's still the newest review, we will read it in Swahili.
Okay. I'll let you do that. Okay. So this is titled Great Disney Podcast, 5 stars by Emmy Ryan, February 20, 2024. It says, my husband introduced me to Lynn and Ken's podcast. I always learn new stuff and great information in their podcast. I enjoy listening to the people they invite on the show and their experiences working for Disney. Right.
That was very nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. That's how you write a review, folks.
That is how it's done, right?
That's right.
If you'd like to leave a review for us, anywhere you want, you can do that, but I only look at the ones on Apple Podcasts because that's like the one I listen to mainly, but that doesn't mean it's the only one. So if you'd like to do that, we will, you know, maybe copy and paste it and send it to thesweetspot@gmail.com, and we will read that one. You know, Ken, that iTunes has this whole thing where you could like change countries and read reviews from other places.
Huh.
And I just looked just now. So if you go to Canada, because they have their own iTunes. I'm going to read this because it wasn't that long ago. Just for fun. All right.
Okay.
We don't just make up things like this sometimes, but it's fun. It says here, this is on the Canadians iTunes. It's titled Thanks and Continued Success, 5 stars by M. Wurzinger 5, January 13, 2024. Says, great show. Awesome guests. I enjoy every episode and always look forward to Ken's wonder at the number of episodes we are all on together. Both books are a must read for any Disneyland fan. Thanks again and looking forward to many more episodes.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah. Let's see here. Let's change countries. I have to go with the... with the
check
English,
Australia,
English speaking countries, but let's see here. This is great podcasting, huh? United Kingdom. Let's see if there's a new one there. We're just going to do this until people just start to leave. And then let's see here. Do they have any reviews recently here? There are no reviews on the UK iTunes. All right. I know we have listeners in the United Kingdom. All right, let's do one more, Ken.
Okay.
Pick a country, English speaking.
Australia?
Australia. Austria. I don't see Australia.
Australia. No, nothing from Australia. New Zealand.
New Zealand.
The Shire. Nothing from the Shire.
Oh, here. Here it is. Okay. Bass, Australia. Okay. We're going to do this. Sorry, guys. This is extra bonus footage for you guys.
All right.
Australia. Oh, but it was 5 years ago, but
let's read. We haven't changed a bit since then, so.
We're going to read these. These are fun. Okay. It says, this is Australia's site. Great insight. 5 stars by Cold Fusion. January 23rd, 2019. Not the best. Okay. Maybe we're not going to do this.
What?
Not the best produced show,
but how the dare best. They?
But the best back of house insight of all Disney shows. Well, this is 2019, you know. all right, well, that was great.
You have improved the production value.
We have.
You've done a lot of work with that, so thank you.
Let's look at this one, 2012, Kent. We're not going to do this all night, guys. I'm going to cut it off.
This could be its own episode. It was just...
Yeah. Okay, well, let's read one more. This goes way back, okay? Sweet Spot Smile, 4 stars by OzText 24, December 9th, 2012, Ken.
Wow.
I love this podcast. I listen to lots of Disney podcasts, and I enjoy them all for different reasons. Lynn and Laura and Tommy Picks on the Sweet Spot always bring a smile to my face. This may not have the polish of other shows, but that's one of the things I really do love about the Sweet Spot. The show feels very genuine and easy to relate to. There's still lots of news, history, interviews, and opinion all about things Disneyland. I also love that they are former cast members with interesting stories and perspectives on the resort. Y'all do a great job, and I look forward to listening to the show every week here in Australia. I wonder if that person still listens.
My name has changed a bit since then. The person probably doesn't still listen because they probably said, he's not reading my review. I'm not going to stop listening.
Little did you realize, I had no idea about all this. This is very fun. Okay, so we're going to end it here. I'm going to take a look at some of these. Oh, wow, Dutch. Okay, so maybe we'll do this for a bonus episode. That'd be kind of, it might be kind of boring, but
it's Great Moments with Mr. Baron, the history of the Sweep Spot podcast.
Yes, as we brag about ourselves. Okay.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed that little banter at the end. And we'll talk with you next time.